Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the Broadway talent showing up on your screens during the pandemic. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Tiana Paris. The actor was in the original cast of Slave Play during its off-Broadway premiere at New York Theatre Workshop, where the play picked up the acclaim and attention that propelled it to Broadway, and eventually earned it 12 Tony nominations. But Paris didn't follow the show to Broadway, and one of the reasons why just premiered on Disney Plus last week. The summer after Slave Play's off-Broadway run, Marvel announced that Paris was joining the Marvel universe of superheroes as one of its often overlooked trailblazing characters, Monica Rambeau. Paris makes her debut in the role in the Marvel series WandaVision, in which she appears opposite Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany, and will reprise the part in the upcoming Captain Marvel 2. Paris is in the virtual studio with me to tell us about going from an off-Broadway buzz magnet to one of the biggest franchises in Hollywood. Hey, Tiana. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Gordon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I wonder if we could start off talking a little bit about your connection to the theater, because a lot of people will know you from your work on screen and like stuff like Mad Men or Dear White People, the movie, and you know, the stuff you've got coming up for Marvel. But you know, you were in the original cast of Slave Play and you went to Juilliard. I just wonder if you could tell me a little bit about when you first started doing theater, when you first discovered it.
Theater is most definitely my first love. I grew up in public school system and my creative outlet was the drama club. So
what part of the country was that?
Yeah, I'm like in the country, and not like the US country, but like the country, the South, Hopkins, South Carolina is where I grew up. And so it's like sports or you're the theater kids or cheerleading and dance and things. And I kind of did actually a lot of everything. I played softball, cheerleading for a bit. And then with drama club, that sort of became the thing that I just stuck with. I really enjoyed it. It was fun. We were, you know, making sets and, directing each other, making costumes. It was just fun. That was my cup of tea. And that's really where I got started in sixth grade, drama class.
Do you remember at what point you decided to try to pursue it professionally, to like go to school for it and go for it?
Yeah, I remember going, you know, so I was in drama class, drama club all the way through from sixth grade to 10th grade. Yeah. And in my 10th grade year, my mom actually heard, she was eavesdropping really, and heard a teacher and another parent talking about a school for the arts, and it was called the South Carolina Governor's School for the Arts and Humanities. And so she started doing her little research, and she was like, I heard about this school. You need to go. It's for acting. And the school actually is for acting, creative writing, musicians, ballet, and vocal arts. And so it was this amazing program that actually was still a public school. So it was free to go, but you know, you had to pay for like your meal plan thing, or in housing, I think, some version of that, but I had a scholarship. So, so I kind of jumped my own story. I got in, and, got a scholarship, and I was able to do my last 2 years of high school at this art school. It was a boarding school. So I lived there and did everything. And so there is where I kind of figured out, oh, there's a craft to acting. And that's where I deepened my understanding of the craft of it all. And, you know, drama club is fun. You just have to get it done. The end result is the main thing. What do the parents and faculty and friends see when it's up on the stage? At this drama school, at the Governor's School, it became more about the process and what it takes to get to the end result. So that's where it started becoming more serious, I guess, to me. And from there, obviously, you know, you want to audition for the big schools. And Juilliard was always on my radar since I was a little girl, when my dad, who was a huge fan of Robin Williams, was like, well, Robin Williams went to Juilliard. So if you want to be an actor, not that my dad sounds anything like that, but that's how my impression of him right now is. He's like, if you want to be an actor, then I guess you better go there. So that was like at 9 years old. Fast forward to the Governor's School. It's time for graduation and auditioning. And I applied to 15 liberal arts schools and 5 conservatory schools for acting. And I was like, no matter what, I am going to college. I hope I can go for acting, but ooh, I better try. My guidance counselor was sick of me, let me tell you. So I auditioned. I got into a couple of the liberal arts schools. And as far as the drama schools, Juilliard was the only one that took me. So yeah. I was really blessed in that way.
Right. And so as then you were starting to begin your career, how did you think about theater factoring into your work going forward? Because you're obviously also exploring, you know, lots of film and TV opportunities at the time also.
Right. By the time I graduated from Juilliard, film and TV was still this big mystery, this thing we've never really gotten to do, never really understood. And so I was really excited and drawn to the idea of exploring film and television. Right. I've always wanted to maintain my relationship with the theater because it is so gratifying and you use such different muscles. And I do think I waited too long, if I'm honest, between being on stage. From when I graduated, I did a play right out of school called Free Man of Color with Jeffrey Wright, Mos Def, Nicole Beharie, and some other amazing actors. And then there was a, I don't know, 8-7 year span before I got back on the stage. And I think that is too long. I would not do it that way again. I think that muscle has to be used more regularly. So just trying to figure out that process, that was rough. That was rough. But
that actually leads me exactly into my next question, which was what that experience was for you coming back to the stage for Slave Play, which is a, you know, massive and sort of harrowing role. How did you get involved with that? And what was that like for you after you'd spent so much time, working in one medium or two other mediums and then coming back to this thing that you'd done so often before?
When I read the script for Slave Play, I couldn't believe it. I was like, what is this? Who wrote this? Oh my gosh, I need to be a part of this. It's just so smart and it's so fresh. And I loved how how Jeremy, the playwright, was dealing with what it means and what it, a different view, a different take on what it means to be Black in a white space, particularly when you choose as a Black person to be in a, to share space with a white body in this instance, it's because they're in a relationship. The play dealt with interracial relationships between Black people and white people. And what that experience can be for some, and the trauma of our history as Black Americans, and what that brings into each relationship, right? So reading it, I'm like, oh my gosh, he is crazy. He is crazy. Who is this guy? And then you meet Jeremy. I don't know if you've ever seen him or spoken to him, but he is a whole character in and of himself. I love him. And so I auditioned like everybody else, you know, in the waiting room, like, oh my gosh, it was crazy. And then I got it. And working with Robert was really a treat because I was a fan of his.
Yeah, the director, Robert O'Hara. Yeah.
Yeah, director Robert O'Hara. And I remember seeing Barbecue. His play Barbecue. I love that play. But obviously his work dates back before then. And so I wanted to be a part of this project. And then once you get into the specifics of what it took to actually bring Kenesha to life, it was very difficult. You know, it was really, for me, my personal experience is obviously Kenesha, if you've read the play, she is in a very fraught, delicate, and also a bit volatile emotional space, trying to figure out who she is in this moment as she loves this man who is her husband, this white man, and this relationship, like just trying to, like, not midlife crisis, but it is a bit of a life crisis, a self-identity crisis in a sense. And so when you choose as an actor to step into that mental psyche 8 times a week, rain, sleet, snow, or shine, it is a commitment. And I forgot what that can physically and mentally do to my instrument and to me as the human being who is, I have to use my body as a vessel to tell Kenesha's story. And so there was that level of it. Then there was the level of trekking downtown. It's a New York City downtown theater and it's cold and I'm on the train and you forget how the elements affect your throat, your voice and your mind. And now my throat, my nose is running and it's the thing you love, but I had waited so long to keep doing it, to do it again, that I guess I got a little spoiled. You know, on film and television, you drive, go to the stage, you have a dressing room, my own private dressing room. And it was really those very technical things of having to refigure out, like, how do I stay grounded when I don't have full access to my instrument? Like, my voice is gone. I am sick. If I take an Advil, how, like, it literally would affect the performance. Like, you know, the lights start doing a thing and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm overheating. And you're thinking of all of these things and still trying to tell the story. And that is what theater is. Like, that is, there is no fucking cut. You have to figure it out in real time. How do I calibrate my instrument so that I can tell this woman's story? And I'd forgotten all of it. So it was a whole learning process to get back on, just to be back on a stage, and then couple that with the emotional intensity of Kenesha's individual and story and that of the entire play. I really set myself up. And then on top of that, there was a lot of opinions on the play, and you know, people really loved it or they really hated it. And so I was being attacked online for things that I'm like, this is this is art. This is this woman's story. It's not fair, but I didn't even have the energy to engage with it. Like you have to figure out how to keep moving forward. So there was a lot going on. There was a lot going on.
Yeah. And at the same time, there was all the sort of, in addition to the people, you know, who hated it, there were all the people who loved it and all the people, their sort of industry was so excited. And that was, what was your experience of that, like, you know, that time off Broadway as like everyone is starting to come see it and all the like, you know, folks are like thinking about it going to Broadway and stuff. Was there ever a time when you would have been able to go to Broadway with it? Was that something you wanted to do?
They definitely, I mean, when we were in it, that was not the conversation. Again, Gordon, I was hanging on by a thread. I was trying to get the story told with everything I had. Like by the time the curtain dropped on the last extension date, I hit the floor when we went backstage. No, I'm not even joking. I was crying, full of tears. Like it took, it pushed me so far beyond what I knew I was even capable of. And, you know, like we were backstage and my castmates are like, we all huddled together and they're rubbing me and like we had to lift me up so we could go take our final bow. But my body just was like, oh my God, oh my God. Cause you're carrying Kanisha's weight. I'm carrying my own personal weight of everything. So, and you know, that character, Kanisha, really is like the metronome throughout the entire, she's like a slow, it's all bubbling and boiling for her throughout the whole thing. And then it all, you know, kind of explodes for her. But as far as Broadway, that came up later, way after we had wrapped, as far as I can remember. And by that time I was already committed to join Marvel. So, you know, but my girlfriend, Jakina, who I also went to school with, she killed it. And she's also nominated for a Tony, a couple of them. So I'm really excited for them. And couldn't wait to a better woman.
I'll have more with Tiana right after the break. And now here's more with Tiana Paris. Let's talk a little bit about Marvel and what's coming up for you there. I was curious, just first of all, when you were first auditioning or being considered, because it's such a franchise thing and so many characters end up showing up in multiple properties, were you auditioning for the project WandaVision? Were you auditioning for the role that you were going to play in possibly multiple things? How'd that work?
I mean, as far as I know, let's just say that I was auditioning for WandaVision.
Okay.
I had gotten dummy sides. And if you've seen the first couple of episodes, it'll make, so the sides that weren't actually the real sides were sides to represent some of those first couple of episodes.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was in, you know, it was the different eras and periods. Yeah. And I was just like, Shauna, my agent, didn't you say this was for Marvel? She's like, yeah. I'm like, I don't get it. What is happening here? She's like, I don't know. But they said the note to the actors is it's okay to be over the top and do too much. I'm like, I don't get it, but okay. So I turned in what I was like, I don't know what this audition is gonna look like. Good luck to me and bye tape. See you later. I was so confused. I was so confused. And they don't give you any context. I didn't know the character. It just said like lady. Like, okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I did, and I sent it off and I didn't hear about anything for a while.
Yeah. And by the time this episode airs, our listeners will have seen the first two episodes. So like they'll have a sense of kind of what the tonal, like what, as you know, committed to secrecy as Marvel is, we can safely say that WandaVision is like a massive tonal shift for a Marvel project. Like it's completely out of left field looks super fun. But And one thing that is clear from watching that first batch of episodes that I've been able to see was that, like, you guys seem to be having a really great time with it. Is that true? Like, the cast just seemed to be really enjoying getting into these, like, different eras. Was that true for you?
Yeah, I loved it. And honestly, I mean, we had a lot of fun on that set. Lizzie and Paul, they are such great leaders, you know, like, this is their baby, their time to, I was really excited that Wanda and Vision would have this space and opportunity, or Lizzie and Paul would have the space and opportunity to really deepen Wanda and Vision's relationship, and we get to see more of them. And just as human beings, they were just really nice and great leaders of the pack, you know, like, this is you, the people who are leading the show, they matter, like, their attitudes, their personalities, and they were fun. And so we really did have a great time. I mean, everything that could go wrong probably went wrong in trying to shoot this thing. And so it was like, okay, let's keep good spirits. And then,
mean, or what kind of, how, I mean, I didn't the pandemic happen at some point, well, while you were shooting? So
that, there's one of them. There, that's number 563. No, that's right. Number one. But yeah. Then, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's just like, it's Marvel's first time doing Marvel Studios first time doing a sitcom, right? And so I've always said, like, it did feel like we were making multiple movies. Mm-hmm. It didn't really feel like a show per se. And so I think just logistically, there were things that, it's also fucking epic, you know, it's like all so big. Like, I don't know exactly how to put that so much as, it was like, it was a lot. And then we finally got to, okay, we fit, like, even like the weather, like, there's supposed to be sunshine and clear skies, right? Or at least not rainy skies. Mm. Like, the last month in Atlanta was all rain, cold, freezing. Like, I think we even might have had snow at one point. So we could not shoot. Like, you can't shoot. You can't fake sun and or not. You know, that's one thing movie magic can't really do. So it would just be like, all right, when are we gonna shoot? So then finally we finish in Atlanta. It's like, all right, we got a couple weeks break and we're off to LA to finish, maybe a month and we're done. Not happening, because here comes coronavirus. It just became like, oh my gosh, are we ever going to finish? I really want people to see this. And so even with all of that, I'm excited that it's finally here. We did finish. And I'm proud of the work we did.
It seemed one of the things that seemed like a lot of fun for you guys is the ability, because you guys change sort of acting styles as the kind of a style of each individual episode sort of shifts, right? It's like, you know, a person's acting style in like a 50s sitcom is totally different from a 70s or an 80s or a 90s. Was that fun for you guys to play with? Did you guys did you do research for that? Did you, you know, watch some
old classic sitcoms?
Yes,
we definitely had to shift with each era. And we actually had a sitcom boot camp with Matt Shackman, our director, where we watched a bunch of sitcoms. And like you said, it is a difference. Like in the 50s, okay, you have a live audience. So that's a whole other character you add. When you move into like the 70s, you add a laugh track, or it might've come before then, but the element of a laugh track. Oh, okay, so you say this thing and then you kind of have to take some space to let the laugh track do its thing and things like that. And just physically how the, how the performance changes as the decades change as well. It was really fun to play with.
In general, as you were thinking about your career and stuff you wanted to do in it, was being a superhero on your radar? Do you have any connections to shoot superheroes, or did it seem like a fun acting gig? What was your connection to superheroes before all this?
I have always wanted to be a superhero since I was little, just period, point blank. Who doesn't want to fly and stuff? I did. I was definitely like also just into characters that kick ass. So like the Ninja Turtles, that was my shit. That was my sheets. I had some draws. Like, you could not tell me I was not a Ninja Turtle. I think I might even had a lunchbox. Yeah. So I've always loved that kind of world about it, that world. And then like in college is when Iron Man dropped and I was obsessed. And then that's where I became more specific of, I want to be a Marvel superhero. Yeah. Like I have said that for years. I mean, it's always been a thing and I'm really excited to join the MCU as not just anybody, like Monica Rambeau is legend in these streets, in these comic book streets.
Yeah, tell me about, again, she's one of the characters that I feel like either, like the general population, like maybe doesn't know who she is. Like you either don't know who she is or you're kind of obsessed with her because she's super awesome. Tell me a little bit about kind of when you learned about her and her history and what sort of research you did.
Yeah, so Monica Rambeau, I learned about her specifically some years back on Twitter because fans started fan casting me as her and they would tag me in it. Yeah. This was at least 6 years ago, maybe a little longer now. And so I was like, well, who is Monica Rambeau? Because y'all are really excited about this. So I looked her up and I'm like, oh, wow, she's pretty cool. Just a real brief, like, let me just see what she looks like, what she did. Okay. Yeah. And I was like, well, thanks guys, but probably will never happen. You know, not going to happen. And that was my brief introduction to her until then Captain Marvel came, MCU's Captain Marvel, and they had her as a little girl. Yeah. And then once I booked it, I was like, oh, okay. So Monica Rambeau in the comics actually was the first female to lead the Avengers and first Black female as well. Maybe only Black female.
I'm not sure either, but I guess
I'm not sure. I'm gonna say first, but I know she is the first female to lead the Avengers and we'll have to check on the other thing, we'll fact check that. Yeah. But yes, and so she's had a long history with different characters in the comics, and like for decades, really, she's been around. And so when I started doing research, I was like, okay, well, where do I even start? So I started at the beginning, where her origin story is in Amazing Spider-Man, if you want to check that out. And so I just really had fun just learning about who she is. And for this particular role for in WandaVision, I was like, okay, she has so much source material. Where do I start? And how much do I need in order to tell this story? So I'm still making my way through the comics. You know, she's been Ultimate Avengers, the Ultimates, Next Wave. Like, she's got a life in many places. And so it became, okay, what can I use right now? And then having watched Kira Akbar's performance in Captain Marvel, what can I pull from what she did with Monica as a young woman? And even those relationships that young Monica has with her mom, Maria, and Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel. So it was just sort of trying to source it all together, put it in a place, see what I could use now, what I didn't need at this moment. And then also talking to Matt and Jack and Mary Lovanos about what else do I not see that, you know, you guys might have be privy to that I need to maybe start incorporating in trying to craft who this woman is. So that was a really fun process, or is still going, you know.
I mean, yeah. So, and it's, we already know that you're going to be playing Monica in Captain Marvel 2, which is that what you're working on right now?
No, I am in Atlanta filming They Clone Tyrone with John Boyega and Jamie Foxx, a film directed by Jewel Taylor. So it's really cool and exciting. It's like sci-fi meets Get Out sort of thing. It's pretty fun. It's pretty crazy. So that's what I'm in Atlanta working on. But Captain Marvel 2 has been confirmed. And so, yeah, we'll see when that happens.
Yeah. When one of the things that I always occurs to me as people get involved in something like Marvel, which is this, like, it's this amazing acting gig, but it also can be sort of a massive commitment in terms of, like, you're not just signing on for one thing, you're signing on for, in many cases, a lot of things. And that will, while great opportunities can sort of limit your kind of freedom to, for instance, be in another play, like if it's like, you know, conflicts with a shooting schedule. Was there any trepidation on your part on that level as you were getting into this?
No, yeah. No, not at all. I mean, maybe it's because, like I said, I've always wanted to be a Marvel superhero. But I do love the other work that I've been able to do. And I don't know, maybe, you know, I know you're supposed to sign on for a long time, but I'm trying to think, like, that wasn't really... I don't know. That's like, it's not like they said, okay, you're going to be doing this, this, and this, and this. And so I was like, had it even a moment to think about it. I signed up for WandaVision, and then, you know, there's the opportunity for it to maybe go further, but it was no real, I mean, I don't want to say this if it's not true, because maybe I was just like, yeah, I'll do it. But I don't recall it being like, this is 15 years of your life, you know, what to do. So beware. It wasn't that sort of thing. It was like, I wanted to do it. I understand how it works. Like, I see that people who are in it can be here for a minute, but I don't know. I have time. I'm already, we're in it. I have time to do other things. I'm doing this movie. If coronavirus hadn't happened, I would have had time to do something else. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, so you're working on this film now, and you've got Captain Marvel 2 coming up. Is there anything else on your plate that we should know about?
Well, at some point, I think Candyman might come out, maybe day. Yeah, and that was pretty cool, working with Yaya and Nia DaCosta, who will also be working. I will also be working with her in Captain Marvel 2. She will be directing that. So that's something that's coming out. Other than that, I don't know. I think that's it.
When you said you wanted to try and get back to the stage more regularly, what's a good time? How long do you want to go before you're back on stage?
Okay, so I finished Slave Play in, I think, 2018, which at this point, that's like 2.5 years ago, I think, which is crazy to me. So I had said, like, hopefully, like, every 3 years I could get back to the stage. But in general, we've all lost a year. This time it might be like 4. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see. It has to be the right thing.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, actually, is what was the nice thing? Are you a new play person? Are there sort of classic roles that you're interested in playing?
I mean, the one I just did was a new play. I'm open. I mean, I like getting to know new writers, and I'm, you know, that process of workshopping a play and being a part of creating who this character will be, I really do enjoy that. So I'm totally open to that possibility. And then, I mean, as far as like something classic, there's beauty in that as well. I mean, I haven't really thought about if I wanted to be a classic or a new work. I think I'm open. It just, when you read it, how it strikes you. And again, can I do this mentally and emotionally for 6 months, a year, whatever it is, 8 times a week?
Yeah, Yeah. Well, we look forward to whatever it is that brings you back to the stage when we can all safely gather in a room together. And we're very much looking forward to seeing how WandaVision plays out, because just the first batch of episodes is wacky and I have no idea where it's going, and I can't wait. So.
I can't wait for you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jenna. It was great to talk to you.
Same. Thank you, Gordon.
That was Tiana Paris, now appearing in WandaVision on Disney+. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow our audience of folks who love theater just as much as you and I do. Or tell a friend. You can find past episodes of Stagecraft or subscribe on Apple Podcasts and on all the other pod places, including Spotify and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is another great place to find more theater for your ears. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode. Until then, find me on Twitter at @gcoxvariety. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.